All right, we are going, I've sent the notes. We'll look at some amazing facts today, some interesting thing. That's what happens when we go verse by verse and when we go book by book of the Bible. We learn so many things that we've not explored before. So, there are some maps also I've sent. But before we do that, let's read John chapter 4. We are in part 3 of John chapter 4, the conversation of Jesus Christ with the Samaritan woman. And remember, Jesus left Judea and he is going up to Galilee. So Judea is down, Galilee is up, north of Israel, and he's traveling to Galilee, and in between that comes a place called Samaria. Okay, he takes a stop there. We'll discuss that in the map later on, but let's read the passage. Maybe someone can read. How about Simi? Today you can read the passage.
When therefore the Lord Jesus heard that Jesus made baptized more disciples than John.
Louder.
Through Jesus himself baptized not, but his disciples. He left Judea and departed again to Galilee, and he must needs go through Samaria. Then cometh he to the city of Samaria, which is called Sychar.
Sychar. So remember this place? Sychar is in Samaria. Okay, this is where Jesus is meeting the woman at the well. Yeah.
Near to the parcel of the ground that Jacob gave to his son, Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being weary with his journey, sat thus on the well, and it was about the sixth hour. There cometh the woman of Samaria to draw water. Jesus said unto her, Give me to drink. For his disciples were gone away into the city to buy meat. Then said the woman of Samaria unto him, How is it that thou, being a Jew, askest drink of me, which am a woman of Samaria? For the Jews have no dealings with the Samaritans. Jesus answered and said unto her, If thou knewest the gift of God, and who it is that saith to thee, Give me to drink, thou wouldest have asked of him, and he would have given thee living water.
Okay, so he would have given thee living water. Okay, and we're going to talk about living water today. What it means when Jesus said living water. Well, if you go through the rest of the passage again, I'm going to read that from verses 11 to 14. He says, Art thou greater than our father Jacob, which gave us the well, and drank thereof himself and his children and his cattle? Jesus answered and said unto her, Whosoever drinks of this water shall thirst again. But whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst. But the water that I shall give him shall be in him a well of water springing up into everlasting life or eternal life or age-lasting life. The woman said unto her, Sir, give me this water, that I thirst not, neither come here to draw. You know, there is a lot of discussion in the Bible about wells. Now, for us, it's very easy. If we want water, we open the tap, water comes, and, you know, we drink and use it, right? But you want to think about Judea and Jerusalem, which most of the Judea is a desert. Okay, and when we talk about desert, we talk about dry. The water is very precious there, right? And you know, when the people sojourn, like Jacob, Isaac, Abraham, they sojourn, and they would come to a place and they would want water because water was very, very essential. Okay, of course it is today as well, but more so in a place like Judea and Jerusalem, because it's a desert place, it's a whole vast desert, dry climate. Okay, and then this people, the sojourn, the whole clan would come and they would actually dig a hole in on the ground, and the water would spring up. Okay, and it was not a stagnant water, it would be a springing water, meaning it would leap, it would gush out. Alright, and there was continuous leaping or gushing of water, and that would actually sustain the whole clan, the cattle and everything. Okay, it would give life, all the animals would thrive, crops would grow. So you understand the importance of a well for the Middle Eastern country. Very, very important. So, you know, so it is not unusual for this woman who is in between Judea and Galilee, place where Jacob, supposedly in this passage, which he says that Jacob is a father, made a well over here, dug a well over here, and she goes, and the whole city of Samaria is going there, and you know they didn't have taps in the in each house like we have today. Okay, they would go and draw water, and you know this is how they would sustain life. If there was no water, there is no life. So this is how Jesus is using this in a metaphoric way, as well as a literal way. Okay, we'll talk about you know both the aspects. But without water, what you have is a desert. That's all. Okay, but more important than that is that you know when you have a well, it was a symbol of establishment. Okay, it was a symbol of possession that you live in that area. That parcel of the land was given to the particular tribe or people group. Okay, so a new well would be a symbol for blessing and establishment. So Jesus here is talking to this woman and telling her. Now he's talking to her on a very spiritual level, but she's understanding on a very physical level. Okay, he is talking about spiritual aspect. She is still occupied with her earthly needs, her a daily chore, okay, of going. She wants to get out of the trouble of going every day to the well and draw water. So she is saying how she can avoid this daily routine and chore, and you know that Jesus can give her water where she doesn't have to come to the well again. But Jesus is not talking about that. Okay, Jesus is talking about life. Okay, not just physical life. He's not talking about physical life, but he's talking about, in this passage, we know very clearly, everlasting life. Just like water is needed to sustain your physical life, Jesus is saying that I am going to give you thing that will sustain you in the age to come. You will live forever. And so this is what Jesus is telling her. And not only that, but you know, God is portrayed in the Bible as the fountain of living water. Okay, fountain of living water is from where we draw life, resources, okay, blessings. Okay, look in Jeremiah chapter 2 verse 12. Be applauded, O heavens, at this. Be shocked. Be utterly desolate, declares the Lord. For my people have committed two evils. So Jeremiah is preaching to the nation of Israel, and he tells them that there are two evils. The number one evil was, they have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters. And the second, hewn out cisterns for themselves, broken cisterns that can hold no water. Actually, here the people of Israel have forsaken the Lord and gone into idol worship. They forsaken the law of God, and they were making idols by their hands, and they were worshiping. In fact, he says in verse 2, in the Jeremiah chapter 2. Go and proclaim in the hearing of Jerusalem, thus says the Lord, I remember the devotion of your youth. So you, when you are youth, I saw your devotion to me. Your love as a bride. How you followed me in the wilderness in a land not sown. So they started very well and they were in love with the Lord. It's, you know, everything when we start new, passionate, you know, and we are zealous and like a new marriage, right? Newly wedded couple. But then over a period of time, what happens? Things become stagnant, complacent, you know. And in this case, we see that they had gone away. In verse 5 and 6, he says, what wrong did your fathers find in me that they went far from me and went after worthlessness and became worthless? They did not say, where is the Lord who brought us out of the land of Egypt, who led us in the wilderness, in a land of desert and pits, in the land of drought and deep darkness, in the land that none passes through, where no man dwells. So the fountain of life is with God. He is himself the fountain of living water. Because all life, and all that sustains and all that is living and quickens is derived from that source, that is God. And notice in this passage, what did people try to do in Jeremiah's day? Well, they worshipped the false god, and not only that, they actually made a cistern. Now, cistern is like, you know, making your own vessel which can hold water. Okay, and sometimes it was, and it was mostly man-made. It's, you can say it's a man-made well, like we have Syntex tank on our roof, you know, that kind. So it has limitation, right? It has limited amount of water that it can hold, and we know we have a big issue over here because we have to put the pump on every time it gets over, and sometimes the tank can have cracks, and what happens? It cannot hold the water and it all leaks, right? And that is the situation here. They were, through idol worship, they were trying to draw blessing and source from idols, which is like a broken, drawing water from a broken cistern, which cannot hold water. Okay, so, you know, and we might say that we don't do idol worship. You know, we don't have idols, we don't do idol worship. But you know what? When we look for meaning, when we look for joy, and when we look for hope outside of God, when we look for hope, when we look for meaning, and we look for joy outside of God, we become idol worshippers. So don't think you're on a good side when we don't worship the wooden or stone or rock, anything. But you know, we can, in our minds and in our hearts and in our actions, can become idol worshippers by not trusting the Lord, trusting in your own ways. This is what they were doing. Man-made systems. So when you are going to trust yourself and your achievements and all that you have and you bank on it, you are an idol worshiper. Very clear. Well, let's talk about living water in a very literal way. Okay, what was Jesus trying to tell her? And we'll come to that in a minute. But before we go there, I wanted to show you the map of Israel. Okay, so in map number 1, we have Israel in the world map. I want you to really closely look at this map. You see on your left is Egypt. You see that Egypt, right? Now, on your right, you see Jordan written there. Israel written there. Okay, that's what, that is the piece of land that we are talking about. Okay, and notice on the right hand side, you have, that is the east side, you have Iraq. You see that Iraq? That's the place, that Baghdad, that's the place where the Babylonians came from and took Israel into captivity. It's the modern day Iraq. Okay, so you heard about, right, how they were taken to captivity, the Babylon, King Nebuchadnezzar, from this present day place called Iraq. And then on top you see Syria and Turkey. Turkey and part of Syria and the north part of Iraq, that constituted a place called Assyria, where the Assyrians came and took the northern kingdom of Israel into captivity. You see how they're surrounded over there. And on the left side, we see Egypt, right? And we know what happened to Egypt. They had been slaves in Egypt for 40 years, right? And God delivered them, brought them. Where was He bringing them? To this land called the land of Israel. And down you have Saudi Arabia, Iran. On top, north, you have Ukraine, Russia, you know. And towards your extreme east, we have, we are here, India. So, notice something very interesting, okay. And people don't agree with that, like, you know, in the world. But if you notice, Israel, Jerusalem, is the center of the earth. It's the center of the earth. So if you spread the earth, the map, Israel comes the center of all the other nations. Well, is it shocking? Ezekiel chapter 5 verse 5 says this, thus says the Lord God, this is Jerusalem. I have set her in the, what?
Center
of the nations, with countries all around her. Wow. Think about this. Now, is it any wonder that Jerusalem is going to be the capital of the entire earth? And that's the place where Jesus will rule from. Jerusalem. One more verse, Ezekiel 38 verse 12. Who acquired livestock and goods, who dwell at the center of the earth. And actually some translation talk, say at the navel. The navel of the earth. What? Navel. Navel, like if we are navel, the center of a body, right? Israel, Jerusalem is the center of the earth. Can you imagine that? It is, that's why Jesus has chosen, God has chosen the center place of the earth to be His headquarter. That's where in the new Jerusalem is going to be established. The city is going to come right down. And you know what? We're going to look at some things today when we read and how God is precise in naming the places. Okay? If that is, that was insignificant and everyone was just going to heaven, there is no need of saying the naming these places. It just doesn't make sense. Right? Why does God talk about literal places when we are not going to be there? We are going to be going, flying off to heaven and be with Jesus Christ forever and ever. And in the funny part is this. Preachers today talk about millennium kingdom and they talk about, you know, Israel and Jerusalem and Jesus is coming there. But then they suddenly take off to heaven. That's the end point. You know? What a deception. Anyways, let's look at this map over here, the second map. We have narrowed down to Israel now here. And if you look at, what I want you to observe is a few things in this map. Number one, is Samaria. Look at Samaria. Is in between Judea and Galilee. Galilee is up, Judea is down, and Samaria is on along the way. Jerusalem, look at the place Jerusalem, that's the capital city. That's where the new city is going to be established, okay, where Jesus is going to rule from, and we are going to rule from, okay, if we are faithful. Another thing that I want you to also observe is this. Look on the west. What do you have? What is on the west of Israel? It's a Mediterranean Sea. There's a sea, right? And then look at on the east side, I would say southeast side, you have a place called Dead Sea. In the map, you see the Dead Sea. We're going to talk about Dead Sea a little bit, okay? And Jordan River, and so on. All right. Now you see. Anyways, let's move forward. Now, coming back, her thoughts, this woman's thought, were not eliminating the physical chore from her life. She was more focused on the earthly concerns rather than spiritual concerns. You know? And we can be caught up. That's something we can learn, right? That we want to be not earthly minded, but spiritual minded. We want to set our mind on things that are above. And when we say that, we are talking about things that is reality. See, when we're saying that setting your minds on things above, we're talking about things that are real. It's going to take place soon. And that is, Jesus is returning. He's going to bring his reward. He's going to establish the city. And there will be a new world. New government. Let these people do whatever. One world, whatever they want to do, you know. And it's going to come to pass, okay? It's going to happen. And people are going to gather, nations are going to gather against Jerusalem and fight. That's going to happen. That's a prophecy, okay? Things, we know that Israel is always in the center and there is a lot of problems going on. But it's going to happen even more, okay? And there will be war, okay? And it's time for Jesus to return and end the war. But let's come back to what Jesus was saying, living water. Now, why did Jesus come up with the idea? Well, if you go to the Old Testament, that's why important for us is that we go back to Old Testament and understand where this language is coming from. So we can understand the Gospels, we understand what Jesus is saying, what Paul is saying and others are saying. So let's go to a very important chapter, Ezekiel chapter 47. Okay, and we're going to just read through quickly. And by the way, just a little background. Ezekiel was a prophet and he was taken into captivity to Babylon. All right, and he was there for many years and God gave him the word to preach to the Israelites who were taken into captivity. And they are, think about this, they are into captivity. They have no hope. They have lost their land. They don't have their own houses. Okay, they're living in Babylon as a captive. And they are sad and they are without hope. And the word of the Lord comes to Ezekiel and God gives him a vision that he's going to give to the Israelites. And that vision is going to bring hope to the nation of Israel, to the people. Okay? Let's read. After this, he brought me back to the doorway to the temple. To my amazement, there was water flowing out toward the east from beneath the threshold of the temple. Now this is the temple that we are talking about, is the future. So Ezekiel is seeing a vision where the temple is there, and from eastward, from the temple, the water is trickling from the throne of God. Okay? By the way, this is not figurative. He's seeing a vision, but this is literally going to happen. Okay? We'll see that in a minute. The temple faced eastward. The water flowed down from beneath the right side of the temple. That is from the south facing side, from the altar was located. Why? I mean, why south side, east side? Why all these directions then? If it has nothing to do with it, right? We are going to go ahead and think about that. Then he brought me out through the north gateway and around to the one outside that faces toward the east. To my amazement, water was trickling out from the part of the south side too. Now, please follow this trickling of water, alright? As the man went out toward the east, he carried a measuring line in his hand. He measured about 1,500 feet. So from the water that was trickling, it takes him 1,500 approximately feet away. And as he led me through the water was what? Ankle deep. So it starts like a little trickling water from the temple, and 1,500 feet away, the water is reached up to ankle length. Then he measured out another 1,000 feet. So from there, another 1,500 feet he takes him, where he led me through water that was knee deep. So now the water has reached here. All right. You know what is knee, right? Okay, and then he measured out another 1,500 feet from that place, and the water was waist deep. So what's happening here? You see the level of water is increasing. From where? From a tap or trickling of water, right? Usually it's the other way around, right? You have a huge body of water and then it goes, becomes bigger, you know, it gets smaller and smaller as it travels. But here it's the other way around. It's coming from the throne of God, and that water is getting deeper and deeper. It's come all the way to the waist. When he had measured about another 1,500 feet, the water had become deep enough that I wasn't able to ford it. He was sinking, basically. Instead, I would have had to swim through it. Then he was bringing me back along the river bank. He asked me, "Son of man, did you see all of this?" As we were coming back, I was amazed to see that there were many, many trees lining both banks of the river. So now this tree is very important. So there is, on both the sides of the river bank, there are trees. Okay. He told me this river flows toward the eastern territories all the way down into Araba, and from there its water flows toward the Dead Sea. You saw it in the map? Where the sea water turns fresh. Ah, let's stop here for a minute. Do you know why the Dead Sea is called Dead Sea? Anyone? Why is the Dead Sea called Dead Sea? Exactly. It's full of salt. Alright? And minerals. And it's so salty. It's so salty that no fish, no living creature except for bacteria and fungi that we found, but nothing else. You can't even drink it because it's so salty. Okay? And it's actually a tourist attraction. Please, people go there and they swim. No, they don't swim. They float. Okay, the water is so salty, so dense with salt that if you go suddenly you will find your body rising up on the surface of the water and you're floating. So you can take a book and read and don't have to do anything. Okay, watch some videos if you want to. Let's see. And you know, the interesting part of this place, Dead Sea is the lowest body of water on the entire earth. It's about 1,300 below sea level. Okay, let's read it. For thousands of years, water flowing from the watershed of Mount Hermon through the Sea of Galilee down the Jordan River, we saw that Jordan River and the map, valley between modern Jordan and Israel entered the sea where it died. There is nowhere else for gravity to take the water from this low place. The surface and the shore are about 1,412 feet, which is around 430 meters, below sea level. Its water can only escape by evaporation, leaving behind water, whatever minerals it carried along. Toxic concentrations of salt sting tender skin. To drink of it would cause illness or even death. Okay, but people go there and take the salt and the mud, black, and they actually put on their body and they have bath with it. It's supposedly considered to be healing to the skin. The Dead Sea has its uses. Chemicals such as potash and bromine are harvested. Sufferers of skin disorders bathe in the water to aid healing. Tourists come in their thousands to see it and experience the strange sensation of floating on its waters. Yet it is Dead Sea. Fish cannot live in it. There are no aquatic plants. It cannot be used for irrigation, cannot serve the life-giving function of water. But you know what? What God promises in Ezekiel 47? That will change. For thousands of years, from the time we know the Dead Sea, it's dead. It's dead. But it's going to change. The Dead Sea is going to become a living sea. And how it's going to happen? Well, the water, literal water, is going to come down from the throne of God, and actually it's going to go into the Dead Sea. And what it says, we read in verse 8, right? Water flows towards the Dead Sea, where the sea water turns fresh. What an amazing prophecy. And not only that, let's look at verse 9. What happens when the water goes into the Dead Sea? It will support all kinds of living creatures that will thrive abundantly wherever the river flows. There will be a great many fish because this water will flow there and turn the salt water fresh. As a result, everything will live wherever the river flows. Amazing. So you're going to find fish and living creatures in the Dead Sea, which is going to become life, living. Notice not only that, it's going to be a great place for catching fish, for fishermen. Can you imagine that? Now you talk this to people, they will laugh at you, isn't it? Well, God is going to laugh at people, you know? Think about the only place in the entire earth which is dead. See, God is going to bring it to life. What is God trying to tell you? God has the power to bring to life that which is dead. Right? And this is exactly how He's going to do with the corpse. Right? We are going to be resurrected. Life is going to be given. Now watch this. A day will come when fishermen will line its banks from En-Gedi to En-Eglaim. This is the exact location on the earth. By the way, En-Gedi is another. We'll watch a video later on at the end of the message. This is a 20 minutes video I want to show you. En-Gedi is a place where, you know, as we know, Judea is full of desert, right? And En-Gedi is the only place where actually you find oasis. Okay, there is palm trees, there is greenery, and there is water there. Can you imagine out of nowhere, like, you know, you have this place called Engeri, and you now you have resorts over there. You can go and stay in Engeri resorts and other places. You have they can take you on a tour. Engeri is a place where also David hid himself when he was running from Saul, and he found water over there, and him and his men refreshed themselves with the water over there. All right, interesting. Anyways, let's go further. There will be plenty of room for spread out nets. So these fishermen are going to put a net from Engeri to Eglaim, which is in the Dead Sea. So like a huge portion of Dead Sea, they're going to put a net and they will be able to draw fish. There will be all sorts of species of fish as abundant as the fish that live in the Mediterranean Sea. The river delta will consist of swamps and marshes that will remain in the saltwater wetland preserve. I just want to take you to the map. If you just look at the map here, the Temple River. I found this somewhere. And look at this. On your left, you have, on the west side, you have a great sea, which is called the Mediterranean Sea. And then right on top, you see Jerusalem and the temple. In this, you see the temple? And if you look at the eastward, the arrow is taking you to the eastward, called Dead Sea and Eglaim and Engeri. Can you see that? All right. Notice that temple, where the temple is. In Ezekiel vision, by the way, the water is trickling from the temple and going westward into where? The Mediterranean Sea, right? And on the east side to the Dead Sea, right? But in the vision of Ezekiel, he's talking about only one side of the flow. He's not talking about Mediterranean, the water that is flowing. So he's focusing on what is going to happen this side, right? So notice the water is trickling and it goes into the Dead Sea. Water becomes fresh the moment it touches the Dead Sea, and living things and large number of fish you can find. As you go down the Dead Sea, you see towards the end of the Dead Sea, you see that swamps and marshes of salt. So what it tells us that all the salt that is right now there in the entire Dead Sea, which is not letting anything survive, was going to collect all down in one location. All right, I guess for where is all salt going to go? You know, evaporate? No, it's collecting in one place. And also, I mean, this place is also a place of resources of minerals and salt for the region there. And as we go down, the Dead Sea will flow through the wilderness of Gulf of Aqaba. Very fascinating, I find it. I'm going to continue from verse 12 now. Lining each side of the river banks, all sort of species of fruit trees will be growing. Their leaves will never wither and their fruit will never fail. They will bear fruit every month because the water that nourishes them will be flowing from the sanctuary. Their fruit will be for food and their leaves will contain substances that promote healing. So this is what we're going to enjoy. And this will be for our survival, to live, continue living. Remember, it has a direct correlation with the tree of life, which was in the Garden of Eden, which God barred for people from Adam and Eve. This is what the Lord God says. This is to be the territorial border by which you apportion the land for an inheritance among the 12 tribes of Israel, with Joseph double portion. Apportion it for their inheritance, distributing everything equally as if you were distributing things to your own brother, which is now I promised to give it to your ancestor. This way, the land will fall to you as an inheritance. So he's giving them a hope that it's going to come back, right? You guys are going to come back to the land. This is to be the border of the land on the north side from the Mediterranean Sea by the Hethlon Road to the entrance of Zedad. And I won't name all that places. The border will proceed from the Mediterranean Sea to Hazar Enan, the border of Damascus, and so on. Verse 18, then eastern extremity will proceed from between Horan and Damascus, then between Gilead, and then through the land of Israel and Jordan River. You are to measure from the northern border to the Dead Sea. This will be the eastern perimeters. Perimeters. That would be different. You will determine the southern extremity running from Tamar as far as the water of Meribah Kadesh, and then from there proceeding to the Wadi. And then to the Mediterranean Sea. This will be the southern perimeter. So see, all the description of border places is given, you know, is so precise. Let's go down to verse 22. Dividing it by lottery among yourselves and among the foreigners you live among you and bear children among you, you are to treat them like native-born Israeli. Among you, they too are to be allotted an inheritance with the tribes of Israel. Furthermore, you are to provide the foreigner's inheritance there in the tribe within which he remains, declares the Lord God. What an amazing prophecy. The Dead Sea turning into Living Sea. Okay. And now I want to go into one more passage where it talks about living water again. So let's see, when Jesus was talking to this woman about living water and everlasting life, this is exactly what he's talking about. Okay. And you know, people go into talking about how it's inside of you and, you know, God is living water. Of course he is, you know. But Jesus is being literal over here. He is saying that I am going to be the fulfillment of the prophecies that were given in Ezekiel 47 and Zechariah chapter 14. So we want to remember these two chapters, Ezekiel 47 and Zechariah 14. Zechariah 14 is an amazing passage. We're going to read through a very small portion. But it's talking about living water again. See, that's how we study, right? We find where this word is mentioned, what it's talking about, and gives us an understanding as to why and what Jesus was talking about. Zechariah 14 word, behold, the day of the Lord cometh. I love this phrase. The day of the Lord cometh. And I want you to focus on this, the day. The day. That day is going to be an amazing day. Because it's the day when the Lord cometh. Cometh. Not we goeth. Alright? Lord cometh. Comes where? Well, this passage will tell you where he is coming. Very clearly. And remember, before Jesus Christ comes, what's going to happen? All the armies are going to gather around Jerusalem to war, to fight. Okay? And it says here, behold, the day of the Lord cometh, and thy spoil shall be divided in the midst of thee. For I will gather all the nations against Jerusalem to battle. This is yet future. Okay? And the city shall be taken. The Jerusalem city will be taken. And the houses refiled. Is that what I'm saying correct?
Rifled.
And the women ravished. And half of the city shall go forth into captivity. And the residue or the remainder of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Then shall the Lord go forth. And what will he do? fight against those nations. And when he fought, as he fought in the day of battle, how the Lord fought for the Israel, and he delivered Israel from many nations in the past when they were traveling from Egypt to the land flowing with land, milk and honey. Same way, now the Lord is going to fight. And you know, he doesn't need a sword and go around killing. His word is enough, right? Now, I want you to follow this phrase, in that day, and his feet shall stand in that day upon the Mount of Olives. That's in Jerusalem, which is before Jerusalem on the east, and on the Mount of Olives shall, and the Mount of Olives shall cleave, meaning split, in the midst thereof toward the east and toward the west, and there shall be a great valley. And half of the mountain shall remove towards the north and half towards the south. So there's going to be a change in the landscaping. He's setting up a headquarters there. Okay? And you shall flee to the valley of the mountains, for the valley of the mountain shall reach unto the Azal. Yea, you shall flee like as you fled from before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. And the Lord my God shall come, and all, notice here, and all the saints with thee. Another phrase, in that day, what happens? Continue. And it shall come to pass in that day that the light shall not be clear or dark, but it shall be one day which shall be known to the Lord, not day or not night, but it shall come to pass that at evening time it shall be light, because the Lord is going to be there. It's going to be light. In that day, again. And it shall be in that day, which day? When the Lord cometh, that living waters, here we go, that phrase, that living waters shall go out from Jerusalem, half of them to the Dead Sea in the east, and half of them to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. In summer and in winter it shall be. Here we go. See that? Same thing we just read in Ezekiel chapter 47. It's going to come from the temple, go half into the Dead Sea and half into the Mediterranean Sea. And the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day shall there be one Lord and his name one. All the land shall be turned as a plain from Geba to Rimmon south of Jerusalem, and it shall be lifted up. So this city is going to be lifted up. It's going to be, as we said, it's the center of the earth, right? You can see from any part of the world, you can see Jerusalem lifted up. Not in the air, hanging, but on the mount, right? And inhabited in her place, from Benjamin's gate unto the place of the first gate, unto the corner gate, and from the tower of Hanani unto the king's wine presses. And men shall dwell in it, and there shall be no more utter destruction. There will be end of wars. There will be end of unrighteousness. But Jerusalem shall be safely inhabited. Wow, that's going to happen. And that's what Jews believe today. They believe. In fact, there is a ritual that there is a tradition. Even now, they take the water from the pool of Siloam and they go up to the Temple Mount, and then they pour water. Literally, they pour water, talking about Ezekiel 47. That's the tradition. Every year they do that. I think they do it on the seventh day of the feast of the Feast of Tabernacles. They go up, the priest and all, they go up. They took, you know, pool of Siloam, where the water, you know, that man who had he couldn't, every time he wanted to jump somewhere else, and that water came from the temple, and it was they believe that it was very kind of auspicious. You know, if someone gets into the water, they're holy, right? So anyways, so they take the picture of thing and then they pour it down, depicting what will happen in the future. In closing, Joel 3:18, and it shall come to pass in that day that the mountains shall drop down new wine. And now that's not literal, okay? It's not like new wine is basically, it's talking about a lot of grape, you know, vineyards will be there. And the hills shall flow with milk. Don't imagine milk flowing. It's talking about cattle. There will be abundance of cattle providing milk. And all the rivers of Judah shall flow with waters, and the fountain shall come forth of the house of the Lord and shall water the valley of Shittim. These are literal places. Psalm 46:4, this is another place we find this living water. There is a river whose streams make glad the city of God, the holy habitation of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God will help her when morning dawns. I want to tie up everything. What we spoke about, Ezekiel 47, Zechariah 14, what Jesus said, to the end of the book, Revelation 22. And you will see similarities. What Revelation 22 talks about correlates with Ezekiel 47 we just read and Zechariah 14 we just read. Okay, let's read this quickly. And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal. Notice where it's proceeding from. Proceeding out of the throne of God and of the Lamb. In the midst of the street of it, and on either side of the river, was there the tree of life. You just read, saw that, right? There were trees on either side of the river bank, right? And it was just not one tree. So the tree of life is not just one tree. There are many trees, okay? See, it says, in the midst of the street of it, and on either side of the river was there the tree of life, which bore 12 manners of fruits and yielded her fruit every month. And the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. We just read that in Ezekiel 47, right? And there was no more curse, but the throne of God and of the Lamb shall be in it. And his servants shall serve him, and they shall see his face. Notice this, they will see his face, and his name shall be in their foreheads, and there shall be no light night there, and they need no candle, neither light of the sun, for the Lord God giveth them light, and they shall reign forever and ever. Boy, Jesus is coming at the center of the earth. He's going to be establishing his government in the center of the earth. Jerusalem is going to be his headquarters. We will be transported to Jerusalem, where we are going to be ruling and reigning with him. Why do you think there is going to be a being part of those who are alive will be caught up in the air? For what? Go back. We're going to be caught up to meet the Lord in the air, and to welcome him, and with him go to his headquarter, right? Notice we read that, right? In Zechariah 14 and verse 5, what did it say? And the Lord my God shall come, and all the saints with thee. What does that mean? So he is going to come with angels, and we are going to meet up in the air. We go to the New Jerusalem, where he's going to set up his kingdom. So let's close with this. Let's look for that day when the Lord cometh. Okay? Nobody is going to heaven, right? He is coming out of heaven, and he's going to be in literal place. We know where it is, right? We know the En Gedi to En Elyon. We know the Mount of Olives, Jerusalem, you know the place where Jesus returns. So closing, Colossians 3:2, set your mind on things above, not on the things on the earth. For you died and your life is hidden with Christ in God. When Christ, who is your life, appears, what will happen? Then you also will appear with him in glory. So we live and die to ourselves in order to appear with him in glory. So Jesus, when he's talking to this woman at the well, he's claiming to be the fulfillment of the scriptures, water allusions and pictures and prophecies that we just read. Because Jesus is the one who can give life by resurrection. That's why he said, I am the life and the resurrection. So, I want to show you a small video. Okay. And we'll close with this. I share with you. Oh, can you... Now, this is a pastor who has taken the church to this place, and Gary, and he's talking about Dead Sea and all those things, and he's preaching a little bit, okay, just one message, and talks about, you know, all these, and how it's going to be in the Millennium Kingdom, the what it's going to be, and everything, and towards the end of the video, he talks about going to heaven. Okay, he just says, and we'll be in heaven. You just talked about everything that is going to be in the millennium, and suddenly, what's the point then? What's the point? Just go to heaven. But anyways, you know, scratch that part, but I want you to see the... In that video, it shows the place today, and Gary, Dead Sea. Where David went. So I think it's a good, cool picture for us to see. Really paints a picture. So, let me try. Can you see the screen? Can you see the YouTube screen? Yeah? Okay, good. And see if you guys can hear it.
Three mistakes that I'm...
Can you hear? Oh, good. Okay. So have fun. Okay. This not this guy. This guy.
Made in my career. And that costed me a lot.
All right, fine.